Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast. Hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa John. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Welcome back to the Real Docs Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 6 of the podcast. We are your co-hosts. I'm Dr. Lisa Jung.
And I'm Dr. Britt Lesher.
Today, we're going to be talking about pretty much all things heart-related. So we're going to be talking about, you know, what are some good things when it comes to your heart health, things like blood pressure, cholesterol, and so much more. It's kind of this big general intro, or as Dr. Britt liked to call it, gateway into talking about our heart.
This episode is coming out the week of Halloween, so we thought, what scarier way to introduce the number one killer in the world, right? Heart disease.
And you know what's so funny is like a lot of, whether it's like different clinics or different sort of like education around heart health, usually comes out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
because it's that's more true. Like, it's more like, I think, nice, but we're taking it the opposite.
Yes.
We're scaring you in terms of how and why, you know, things like blood pressure and a lot of heart conditions are called the silent killers. So,
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. I feel like we're probably not gonna stay away from like the congenital type things that people are like born with. Obviously, things can travel in your families related to your heart. Even high cholesterol can travel in families. But I feel like a lot of the other parts that contribute to heart disease and, you know, heart failure definitely are controllable, modifiable things. We're kind of focusing more on those kinds of things and what maybe you should be aware of when it comes to testing, because spoiler alert, your average cholesterol panel is not good enough to determine what your heart health risk is. Should we just start with blood pressure?
Yeah, I feel like blood pressure is probably the biggest and probably, I don't want to say most popular, but most common condition that we do see. So let's start with that.
It's kind of like you're inducted. Once you get prescribed a blood pressure lowering pill, that's like your induction into the conventional medicine kind of cycle, right? Like people go, they may feel scared to be at the doctor's office. They may take a couple readings and your blood pressure is elevated. Oh, here's a pill that's going to lower your blood pressure. But no one ever really gets taught. Maybe they're told like, eat healthy, exercise, lose weight, your blood pressure will lower, but no one really gets good guidance on it. And I think that's like where probably naturopathic doctors shine the most, is with a lot of these like modifiable lifestyle risks, dietary things, right? So when it comes to blood pressure readings, I always have people try to take their blood pressure at home, because especially when you're in a doctor's setting, well, I don't know if you wore white coats all the time in clinic. Sometimes I would wear scrubs and I wouldn't wear a white coat. But, you know, sometimes people just being in the doctor's office, it increases your blood pressure. So I will always have people take readings at home, because sometimes you can just rule out if it's like a white coat hypertension situation, if it's not true hypertension. And then we can double check in office. Sometimes I will have people bring in their blood pressure monitors in office, and I will compare doing it manually my way to their like at home automatic ones. I think our husbands probably get really lucky because we can manually take it at home. Yeah. But if you don't have someone that can take it at home for you, that's where people have to go out and buy those automatic cuffs. Yeah. But they're not always accurate. That's the hard part.
You have to make sure they are calibrated right. Otherwise, that's just going to give you some weird number, which can lead down to medication that you might not need, right? Or even just supplements, whatever have you. But when it comes to blood pressure measurement, it's also a lot of user error. So, you know, we always talk about the white coat syndrome, which is definitely a big contributor and cause to someone having, you know, blood pressure, but it's very situational, right? You're not, you know, there's no like white coats chasing after you, maybe white sheets of ghosts chasing after you. But, you know, in different settings, whether you're at home, you're at family's house, like, I don't know, at a cafe, like it's different than a doctor's office, which can be scary. Even in my one of my like clinics that I did my residency in, the MAs would be doing the blood pressure, but you know, I don't know if it's more of like a different training or maybe it's kind of like a chug and plug sort of like a, you know, processes for some MAs and things like that. But you also see a lot of different sort of errors where it's going to create a lot of that strain and tension in a patient's body that can actually elevate blood pressure. So we would get a lot of like different false elevated readings. I would have to do it again in the office by myself with proper technique and things like that. And then it would be a lot better, usually within like the ideal range. The other thing too, some of us, you know, when we go to the doctor's office, we are in a rush and that happens. So if you're running into the office and you're running late to your appointment and they're just like, okay, let's take you back and, you know, get your blood pressure read, that also is going to raise up your blood pressure, right? So you're getting a lot of different false readings. Per AHA, which is the American Heart Association guidelines in terms of proper blood pressure reading, you want to make sure you are being, you know, inactive at least for like 5 minutes. And then when you're doing your reading, make sure your feet are on the ground, back is supported, you're doing a lot of the breathing. Oftentimes, a lot of people subconsciously hold their breath, which guess what? That raises your blood pressure.
Yeah. If you ever notice that like your blood pressure reading is elevated, stop. Take a couple breaths, take a nice couple big deep breaths, and then retake it. I think a lot of times too, people get scared that it's going to be elevated, especially most of the time when people are taking their blood pressure at home, they're doing it because maybe they had an elevated reading in person. And there's a lot of fear, I think, around like heart stuff, right? Like even a lot of other symptoms when people have like heartburn and stuff, if people think it's their heart, it's going to stress you out. And there is a reason why stress is linked to high blood pressure, right? Because people tend to hold their breath. It tends to like vasoconstrict a lot of your blood vessels when that happens. And that increases the pressure in the pipes. So definitely breathing is definitely one thing that you want to do before you take a blood pressure reading. I think that kind of ties well into this idea of like stress being a contributor of like why people say stress kills, because stress is such an important piece of this like cardiovascular system for sure. And I think part of it could be because a lot of people are maybe not realizing that they're holding their breath. It could also be that like people are just in the sympathetic nervous system state a lot of the time. This is why a lot of first responders, firefighters, those types of people are at the highest risk of having hypertension and leading to cardiovascular symptoms, right? So the main thing that we're trying to prevent here, why we even track blood pressure, why we even track cholesterol, is because we want to avoid someone having a heart attack or a stroke, some sort of cardiovascular event.
Going back to the machine end of things, right? Or like the thing that you use to measure blood pressure. One of the common ones that people also use at home is like the wrist cuff. Mm-hmm. Most people, I won't lie, use it wrong. So then you also get bad readings. I don't want to say bad readings, but not accurate readings at home, because there's also technically a technical way to measure your blood pressure using that wrist cuff. It's actually also not favorable in, I would say, both conventional and naturopathic world in terms of the measurement. If you are ever told to get, you know, a blood pressure monitor machine, or you want to have one at home just in case or anything like that, make sure you get a good arm cuff one that's going to give you the most accurate reading, but also make sure it's calibrated.
Some other things for blood pressure, right? Like we always talk about the dietary pieces. Everyone knows about sodium intake related to blood pressure. Like the more sodium you consume, the higher blood pressure is going to be. And the real reason why that happens is because sodium, it fills up the pipes, right? It's just more stuff in your bloodstream. Water tends to follow sodium as well. So then you're pulling more water into your bloodstream, and that increases more stuff in the pipes means more pressure in the pipes, right? And all of that has to be pushed around by your heart, and your heart's just this little muscle that like of probably of all of the muscles in our body and all of the organs in our body, it's the one that gets the least amount of rest, right? It's just, it's going no matter what. People get told, you know, avoid salt intake, and there's definitely merit to that. But I remember in our cardio classes in our third or fourth year, we each had to pick like a thing that we wanted to focus on with the cardiovascular system. And I actually focused on like fructose, because people don't get told enough about like sugar impact on blood pressure. And it's just as important, right, as the salt intake, because people are consuming a lot of these like high fructose corn syrup type foods, right? There's definitely fructose in fruits and vegetables, and I'm definitely not talking about that, right? I'm talking about the super high loads of fructose that are in like refined foods, high fructose corn syrup, that's always in these ultra refined processed food sources, like what we call like Frankenfoods, right? That's why there's such a huge tie with diabetes and metabolic syndrome and cardiovascular health, because not only is it increasing blood pressure, but it also plays into inflammation, which we'll kind of dive into a little bit later.
Poor heart. It's the overworked, underrested muscle, if you think about it. And anytime there is that buildup of pressure, right, whether it's fluid overload or stress, you also have to think about heart being a muscle. So what happens when a muscle gets overworked? It basically gets bigger, like if you will, with your biceps muscle, right? So there is also this other concern of things, what we call like hypertrophy, a more hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is basically a fancy medical term to say your heart is working so hard that it's actually getting bigger in terms of the muscle fiber, which is going to be really scary and not great for the heart health in the long term, because it really restricts in terms of the contraction, if you will, of the heart, and your poor heart can actually give up.
With lifestyle pieces, you know, we always talk about cardiovascular exercise, cardio, like it's kind of in the name, right?
Cortisol, cardio.
Everyone's like talking about cardio, but I feel like kind of playing into that stress piece too, like there's a reason why, you know, they always say, I don't know if you saw that thing where it was like in Sex and the City, Mr. Big got on the Peloton and was doing high intensity, and then he ended up having a heart attack. Like there is a reason, there is a sweet spot for cardiovascular exercise. And so I usually try to have people aim for low to moderate level intensity cardiovascular exercise at least 150 minutes a week, because that also, like, along with blood pressure, just gets things feeling more elastic, more loose. Your heart is getting practice, right? And getting some sort of like movement going. It's very important to get like approved by your provider in order to be able to even do exercise periods. In special situations, I will give out blood pressure medication. It's not nearly ever the very first thing that I reach for, unless it's a very serious, very elevated blood pressure. Then I'm like, okay, we need to do something right away. But this is one of those things, like you can easily reduce your blood pressure with diet and lifestyle changes and with herbs. Herbs are really great sources for lowering blood pressure. Like I remember when we were in clinic, one of my supervisors was like, you know, this person was already on medication and her blood pressure wasn't controlled. And it was like, okay, we were going to consider increasing her blood pressure medication. And then we had the supervisor essentially said, like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to start prioritizing walking after meals, 15 minutes walk around the block. And I want you to eat like a stalk of celery. Because we know that like celery is like a diuretic, yeah, right? And I want you to do that for the next 2 weeks. And then we follow up and track your blood pressure and obviously like track it at home and things like that. And her blood pressure kind of like went into the healthy range that we were kind of hoping for without having to increase her medication. So I think that's just an ode. Like sometimes these things, our body is very open to these little like suggestions, right?
For me, because in California, I don't have the medication prescription. And for the most part, when people come to see me, they usually want to get off of it or they don't want to start,
right,
blood pressure and all that stuff. So I feel like that's where, again, that diet lifestyle really comes in handy. love celery juice. I would say even things like Mediterranean diet is probably our go-to when it comes to anything really cardiometabolic, because it's so profound in terms of its benefit for your heart, for your metabolic health, all these different things, and really great for the blood pressure too. DASH diet. There's one product, it's a blend of Ayurveda herbs. That's a really great product. I feel like that's always in my toolbox whenever, you know, we're really addressing blood pressure for patients and things like that. If they're like, I don't really want to go on medication. And I'm like, well, let's start with this. And then, you know, if it doesn't get controlled with the supplement and the diet and lifestyle changes, then we may want to like talk with your primary care provider to maybe just add for short term until we can really manage the blood pressure and things like that. Things that come with the blood pressure in terms of comorbidities or maybe even cause is, you know, weight management as well. I think obesity we know is a big pandemic in terms of not just in our country but in the world. Making sure you're getting tested if there's, you know, kind of, it doesn't make sense why someone is gaining a lot of weight. You know, make sure that gets evaluated. Or, you know, how can we support weight management in a healthy, realistic, and efficient way that's also going to benefit your heart and blood pressure down the line too?
Moving into like the metabolic side, right? Like this is where cholesterol, and we kind of touched on it, like there are some inflammatory markers, right? This idea of like metabolic inflammation and how a lot of the things that we're consuming now can play a role in that. I definitely think like when it comes to testing cholesterol, a lot of times people will get the average panel and then they'll come back with like, you know, elevated total cholesterol and then maybe elevated triglycerides and maybe elevated LDL. Like there's so many different things. And I often find too that like normal body habitus, people can have high blood pressure as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be like a metabolic issue where it's visible, right? So I think that's a number one thing for people to be aware of. Like you may be a normal body habitus person, like just thinking of like the non-obese patients. Like I have so many patients that are normal body habitus and their cholesterol and metabolic markers are so insane because they're not eating fruits and vegetables. They're not eating a lot of these kind of healthy, heart healthy foods. So that is kind of a good place to start with like cholesterol and like your metabolic health, because there's so much that goes into play there. Definitely with checking your cholesterol, there's the normal panel, but then I always have people test for their inflammatory markers like CRP. You know, there's the LP little a now that people can test, and that's more having to do with your genetics. There's so many, you can break down your LDL. So maybe we should like dive into the cholesterol piece and like how we kind of look at it and maybe other things that we like test for when it comes to that.
Yeah, I have one patient that I have in mind, super healthy, like very health conscious, very fit, you know, very active, all these stuff, but really, really strong history, family history of cardiovascular, you know, conditions and things like that. His cholesterol is pretty, I want to say it's pretty crazy, but it's definitely, you know, elevated than you would expect in a person. Super important that exactly what Dr. Britt said. You don't want to just only look at the standard cholesterol panel. You want to look at the ApoB, LP little a, the LDL sizes, LDL peak, hsCRP, homocysteine, like all these different things that really play into the characteristics and the qualities of the cholesterol, right? The other thing, when it comes to whenever I work with patients on cholesterol, not just like the advanced cholesterol panel, which Quest has a really good panel.
Oh, the Cardio IQ?
The Cardio IQ. Mm-hmm. Boston Heart, I believe, also has a really good panel that's like very, it's like the alternative of the Quest one. But, you know, whenever we talk about cholesterol balance, cholesterol management, a lot of times, you know, especially with the idea of like statin or even like red yeast rice, there's always kind of this perspective of like the cholesterol production that gets focused on. But a lot of people also don't realize we absorb cholesterol from our diet as well. So oftentimes in a patient, whenever we see that there is cholesterol that's elevated, we have to kind of see, well, are you more of a producer or an absorber or both? And there's other specialty tests that basically help to look into that so that they can actually tailor, oh, like you know, if you're more of a producer, then the statin or red yeast rice makes sense, right? Because that's what it's targeting. If you're more of an absorber, those things aren't really going to do much for you because that's not the mechanism that it's addressing. So getting things like that, this is going really like in like a rabbit hole, but you know, anytime we think about cholesterol, elevated cholesterol, there's always this risk of atherosclerosis or that plaque buildup. The more inflammation that's in the body, that's also why it's so important, like Dr. Britt said, that you have to measure those, that with the inflammation, that's going to oxidize the plaque. When plaque gets oxidized, it gets rancid. Think of like fat getting rancid. It's not going to be, you know, good for just overall inflammation even more. And then there's always that risk of plaque.
Just kind of like mobilizing.
Yeah, mobilizing, yeah. Which then creates that risk of heart attack, stroke, all that sort of stuff. So not only are you measuring your cholesterol level and inflammation, you also want to make sure you do other imagings, if you will. So things I feel like they don't really do a lot unless we're talking more in like integrative cardiology sort of setting, which I did a lot of exposure, thankfully, within one of my residency program, is getting things like your cardiac calcium score. So that really looks at, are there any sort of calcified plaque or calcified cholesterol, if you will, within your heart or the vessels around your heart, looking at the CIMT, which is looking at your carotid intima media thickness. So looking at the big carotid artery here on our bilateral sides of the neck. Are there any sort of thickening within that artery to see, oh, are there actually plaque buildup? There's also, again, this goes into like real deep dive of rabbit hole. Whenever there is cholesterol buildup, there is, you know, any sort of plaque buildup and things like that, even your endothelial function within your blood vessels, which is really important for that vasodilation, opening up your blood vessels so that there's, you know, increased blood flow, things are flowing really well, all that jazz, that gets also dysfunctional as well. So there's so many like different tests and imagings that are available, but it's sad because it doesn't get utilized.
It's really crazy that we have screening imaging done for, like, for example, you get like a mammogram to screen for breast cancer, right? Like we do all of these imagings to screen for certain things, but there's nothing to screen that will get covered annually for people's health. Like a lot of those tests that you talk about, people have to get pay out of pocket for, like it's not necessarily covered. They're very important, definitely. I like for people to understand like your artery system. It's like a freeway, right? So when you're on the freeway, you have your different size cars that have three or four different people in them. And I always tell people like, yes, it matters when we test your cholesterol because that tells us how many different kinds of cars and how many people are in all of those different cars or buses or trucks, right? It tells you kind of who's on the freeway. But then at the same time, you also need to be mindful of like, is there a car crash on the side of the road? Because you know all of those nosy people slow down whenever all of that happens. Like everything backs up. That's when the backup starts to happen. Is it's okay if there's a lot of people on the road, but you know what causes a real backup is when there's inflammation, when there's a fire going on in the side, there's an ambulance, there's all sorts of alarms. So that's why it's almost like just as important, probably I would say even more important, to see if you have inflammation present. I feel like patients feel a lot of shame when they come into the provider's office and their cholesterol panel is elevated or their blood pressure is elevated. And there's a lot of shame there. And I tell people like, you'd be surprised, like the healthiest people that you think they look completely healthy and normal, their labs look crazy. Like they're on the verge of a heart attack, right? So it's like, I wouldn't judge a book by the cover. I would get tested. Same thing for yourself. Don't look at yourself and judge from the exterior. Look at your labs, right? Do the testing. Another thing with the, like what Dr. Lisa was saying about the elasticity of your veins, a lot of that is like, if you think about the freeway, it's like you're driving down the freeway and now they've opened up a zipper lane, right? That's your elasticity. How much can you open and close your lanes? And that is very important. That's why we always talk about like antioxidant therapy, right? Like antioxidants are like, make your blood vessels so elastic so that you can open up a zipper lane. The other thing that I always talk to patients about is this piece of genetics, because there's always this idea of like the high, you know, like having high cholesterol because it's an inheritable thing. And yes, we can't change your genetics. That's what I always say, but you can always supplement. You can always do things around that to support, you know, you're lowering your risk of a heart attack or stroke if you do have hyperfamilial cholesterolemia.
And speaking of antioxidants, also really great for that reduction of inflammation.
Right.
You know, the reds, the blues, the purples are probably like the go-tos whenever we talk about, like, especially for heart health. Even like supplement or nutrients like carnitine, CoQ10, like pomegranate juice, kind of alongside, I suppose, with cholesterol and inflammation and all of that, like good omega-3 mm-hmm. fatty acids, you know, fish oil, making sure those are also within your diet in terms of the healthy fats so that you're not contributing your risk of, you know, the bad rancid fat.
Have you been seeing all of that? There's such a big debate going on right now. About seed oils. Have you seen that? It's kind of crazy. I think like in our nutrition course, we were taught like mostly about like soybean oil being inflammatory because it's like there's omega-3s and then there's omega-6s, and like we do need omega-6s, but those tend to be prone to creating inflammatory things. So when we're talking about inflammation, we're talking about these cells that kind of create, you know, inflammation in the body and are have negative consequences down the road. Right now, the debate online is like about all seed oils being bad and toxic. I think my thought process around it is like, yes, I would rather have people focus more on our essential fatty acids, like the omega-3s primarily. And then obviously you don't want your omega-6 intake to be more than that. Same thing with saturated fatty acids. Like it's going to be there in those meats, dairy, and like those, even coconut milk has saturated fats, right? Like you obviously don't want those to be the primary things, but I am definitely against the idea of like, okay, these things are horrendous for you. I think more prioritizing non like refined ultra processed foods like is like the general consensus. I think we can all agree that these types of foods are not going to be good for you. I see both sides of those of that debate, but it's this thing again where we just like demonize one group or one like type of food or whatever it is, and it really isn't like that. Like we need variety. Anybody that's going around like saying that you need to cut out these four or five different food or a whole group of foods, like unless it's ultra processed foods, packaged foods, refined foods, like Franken foods, like all of those types of things, I'm like, yes, like those are the things we should be staying away from. Eat whole foods from true sources, right? That are derived from nature.
Omegas, whether it's a 3 or the 6 or the 9 or whatever it is, it's always like the big debate topic, because even when like the initial sort of research, I believe, came out in terms of the benefits of omega-3 acids, I think a lot of people started being like, oh, okay, omega-3s are the gold, so we're going to completely get rid of like the omega-6s, right? And then like maybe some year or time later, another research came out saying like, actually, it's not, you know, the benefit only of the omega-3 acid, it's more of the balance between the 3 and the 6, where you do want to be the 3 heavy, because one of the things that we think about within like omega-6s that is relatively contributing to the inflammatory end of things is like arachidonic acid, right, in terms of that inflammation pathway. So yeah, we don't want to be omega-6 heavy, but we definitely want to be omega-3 heavy, but we don't completely want to have no omega-6s either. Funny enough, you know, Quest and Boston Heart Diagnostics also have omega fatty acid lab. So if you want to know what is the impact of, you know, whether it's fish or the seed oils or anything like that on your body, on your health, get tested, because that's going to give you a lot more of an info rather than being like, ah, no this or no whatever or only this or whatever have you, right? You want to make sure, again, everything, I feel like everything within our body, it's that balance. You want to make sure things are in balance. You don't want to be too much of a good thing is not a good thing either, you know? So remember that. And then, you know, if maybe you're like, okay, I want to have some omega-6s, but maybe not in the form of seed oil, or maybe you are a little bit deficient on that. There are other food sources that are a little more omega-6 heavy that are still good for you that you can still, you know, substitute or incorporate into your diet so that you're, it's kind of like a happy medium, you know, like I'm thinking about like walnut oil or pumpkin seeds or like even flax seeds and things like that. A lot of these like plant nuts and seeds are a good sources of that, like omegas, not just the omega-3 but the sixes and the nines. Also, something that I see, and this is a soapbox, sometimes I see patients take like an omega-6 369 and I'm just like, why are you taking this, you know? And they're like, oh, but like it's like a balance. And I'm like, okay, like I get that and I like that idea, and I know this kind of goes a little like hypocritical a little bit to what I just said, but check your levels first and then see if you need those 369s. If you don't need it, or if it's contributing to like more of the negative implication for your omega balance, then maybe not do that, and maybe do more of like the omega 3 supplementation, with 6 and 9s being more of like the food sources, if you will.
Yeah, I always talk to patients about that, because it's like I feel like people are told so often, it's like everyone should be on an omega-3 supplement. And I don't think that everyone needs to be on an omega-3. I definitely think we need omega-3 fatty acids in our diet. They're essential, right? So you need to be able to get them through your diet. But there's so many easy ways that people can get it through their diet and in like healthy sources of foods. Like we think about avocado, fatty fish, like sardines and mackerel. Like there's so many sources. And I try to prioritize for people like getting the things that you can get in through your diet first before we add on something like a supplement that's going to cost you like $40 or $50 a month.
General heart supportive thing.
Another big one that I have been seeing more and more and like testing for more and more is actually hypoxic events, right? So obstructive sleep apnea is another big one. Probably almost, I'm surprised I didn't say this in the when we were talking about hypertension, but a big cause of hypertension in patients is this like hypoxic events. If you've been told that you snore in your sleep, if you've been told that you wake up from your sleep kind of choking, if you've noticed that you wake up from your sleep choking, if you notice daytime sleepiness, like despite getting a full night's sleep, then those could be signs that you may have obstructive sleep apnea. And when we're resting at night, that's when we're recovering a lot from the day. That's probably when your heart is the least stressed of all the hours in the day. So those integral rest periods are so important for your heart.
I think for me, like when it comes to like general like heart supportive things, I think like magnesium is probably like kind of like what we talked about in various episodes. Like magnesium is probably like the one supplement that I would be like, yeah, anybody, not anybody, but probably for like 99% of the population, like is applicable in terms of benefits, but very supportive for the heart, very calming in terms of, you know, relaxing and supporting the muscles as well. So you don't have muscle fatigue on your heart. This is one of your favorites. I'm surprised you didn't mention it. Hibiscus.
Oh yeah.
Is really great for what we call like heart tonic, hawthorn berries as well. But those kind of go hand in hand with like the antioxidant, mm-hmm. In terms of that. So I would say, yeah, those are probably the top three that I think of just for general that we haven't mentioned yet, or mentioned so far. But like Mediterranean diet, I would say that's also like a big, like you get a Mediterranean diet.
I think it's like if we actually like look at the Mediterranean diet of like why it's so popular and like why it's so successful for preventing a lot of heart disease is because it's packed with omega-3 fatty acids and antioxidant foods, right? And also like if you look at the population of the people that are consuming the Mediterranean diet, they're always surrounded by community. They're cooking with each other. They're drinking with each other. They're enjoying each other's company, and that reduces stress. So I feel like those, all of the things, like we like to pull these diets from, I feel like American culture, like we steal things from other places, but it's like we don't want to do the full. Yeah. We like steal the Mediterranean diet, but it's like, but we're still also going to be like stressed out. We hope you guys enjoyed. This is like a full episode.
Love.
Heart.
Boo.
This was a very full episode with lots of information, maybe a lot of words that you didn't understand. Maybe there were a lot of things that you did understand, but hopefully you take something positive from this episode and can apply it to your own life. Obviously, if you have questions or if there's any maybe nitty gritties that you want to ask us about, feel free to reach out. We don't give people medical advice through our social media, but at least we can kind of guide you in the right direction if you do have some questions about that.
Yes. So please make sure to give us a comment if you have any questions, if there's anything that you want to see more of, or, you know, for us to delve into, we'd be happy to do that. Make sure to follow all of our social media, send us a DM if that's the easier way for you to reach us. Happy Halloween. Everybody stay safe. Everybody support your heart and your blood pressure and all of that. And as always,
be real
and stay well.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.